Well, call them the new road warriors. Baby boomers are well known for being trailblazers, and as they enter retirement, they're driving a whole new trend. Many of the first boomers are ditching real estate in favor of the open road and living full-time in a recreational vehicle or motorhome. Kate McNamara covers business for us here on the home stretch, and she joins us now. Hi, Kate.
Hello, Doug.
So what's so attractive about living in a motorhome full-time?
Well, you know, it's sort of like extreme snowbirds, because most of these people go south for 6 months for your maximum until you have to file a U.S. tax return and then you come back. But the twist is that instead of coming back to your house, then you live in your rig when you come back to Canada. And the rigs are not always garden variety caravans. So a lot of the full timers favor the big motorhomes, although there's a huge range of smaller ones and fifth wheels as well. But for the biggies, picture the intercity bus base with a furnace in it, and you can deck it out. You could put in subfloor heated ceramic tile.
Really?
You could have marble countertops.
Well, that must be great for the mileage.
If you want. They're expensive to push around.
No kidding.
I talked to David Samet. He owns Motorhome Travel Canada based in Ontario, and I asked him what the full-timers are into.
The concept of slide-outs, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, where portions of the room expand once the vehicle is parked, is very popular. So you would have a 35 to 40-foot motorhome with three or four slide-outs, which significantly enhances the living area, and then all the amenities. So our typical large motorhome would have a fireplace, residential-style refrigerator, freezer, a king bed, all the amenities, microwave, convection ovens.
So you can get up to 500, even 600 feet out of these, square feet, that is. But they're not cheap. They're going to range from about $130,000 at the low end, right up past the million-dollar mark. When they're new, there's a thriving used market as well.
I have seen some of these behemoths, and some of them are spectacular. But I can't imagine, as I mentioned, they're cheap to run either. So just how expensive are they?
Right. Well, so all of those appliances will run on electricity when you can plug them in. But when you can't, you'll have a generator, either a diesel or a gasoline generator. Sometimes you'll run them off propane tanks, which has gone up enormously recently. So these buses, new, they're going to get you very roughly 8, maybe 9 kilometers to the liter, generally of diesel. At the high end, they're mainly diesel. You want a diesel pusher, Doug, I've discovered.
That's a lot of diesel, and it's expensive.
That's the highway mileage, too. So, and the diesels get better mileage than gasoline, typically. You're not going to take it to Jiffy Lube for an oil change, either. They're too big, so you'll need a diesel truck center for maintenance. It depends, you know, the cost depends on where you are in the country, but I got a few quotes for a straightforward spring inspection. Nothing particularly wrong. In the east of the country, it'll run you closer to $300, $400. In this neck of the woods, closer to $500.
Okay, so it's all starting to add up, and we haven't even seen the Grand Canyon yet or the new Jasper Glacier Skywalk. What are some other costs involved here?
So camp fees as you're on the road, $15 is sort of the low end, up to about $60 at the higher end, which would get you amenities, you know, sewage, electric, water, but also Wi-Fi and cable hookup. And a drive-through spot. So a lot of people look for this, important, particularly since you might have guessed by now we're towing a car behind this thing. Even the fifth wheels and trucks don't like to back up that much. On the other hand, you know, it's a bit like home ownership. You can do it cheaply if you want to. We could try some boondocking. So that's also called dry camping. So no hookups, no water, no sewage, no electric. Very cheap, sometimes free. Sometimes illegal, but you can do it legally in Walmart's
parking
lot.
That's right, the Walmart parking lot. What a lovely view you would have.
You'd be there for opening.
Although this time of year, you can look at the gardening section. So there is some greenery.
Well, that's true. You'd have neighbors to chat to.
All right, so what if I want to settle down a bit? How much will I have to spend?
So there are a rising number of RV parks that cater to, you know, longer-term or permanent residents. You can lease a parking pad. And by the month, it might cost you as little as a few hundred dollars a month. You could buy a deeded one. $50,000 to $100,000 is about the range. There are more in Alberta and Saskatchewan these days. Lots in BC, certainly. They're not trailer parks, so they're designed for your drivable rig. You'll be pleased to hear about the concrete parking pad, because without it, my friend, that marble is going to make you sink up to your axles in no time. I spoke to Carol Ann Quabell. So she says the retiring full timers often take to these parks, and she writes the blog Roaming RV.
There are some, of course, that budget for the time that they have to hang up their keys and cannot RV anymore. A lot of them, when they can't RV anymore, sometimes they'll put their RV into a full-time RV park, or they'll sell their RV and buy a park model, live in the park in the park model. They're still in amongst people of similar interest.
And there are good reasons for the more mobile crowd to use these parks as well.
And what are those?
So mainly a permanent address. Remember, most people going south for 6 months. Then you come back to Alberta. Alberta Healthcare wants you to be here basically 5.5 months to qualify for healthcare. You can get a one-time exemption, I think, to be out of the province for 12 months. But after that, you really need to be here your, I think it's about 160 days a year. Full-timers hate this rule. They do have ways of getting around it. So the parking pad gives you somewhere to come back to. And then they also say it's plausible cover, especially if you receive mail there to suggest you've spent your required time at home, if anyone comes asking. The other thing people do is to keep a physical address is to rent a room, sometimes at a friend's, maybe from one of their kids. And so long as they keep receipts, then that helps prove residency. It's not just about health coverage. That's a lot of it, but also vehicle registration, driver's license. Those need to go to a physical address. Ditto the grouchy U.S. border guards who haven't had lunch yet. They want to make sure you're going home.
It sounds very expensive.
It can be very expensive, but people certainly do it on the cheap, and there are endless clubs dedicated to swapping cheap secrets.
So, okay, here's my plan. I'm going to rent a room in Jenny's basement, and then I will spend a month in Provence and a month in Tuscany.
What's in it, sounds, for me?
I'm willing to go up as high as like $250 a month because I'll never be there.
Well, that's pretty good bargain. But you can't take the dogs that you've traded in for the kids that have left home.
Don't have either, though, so I'm good.
It's still got the kids, but once you miss
eventually,
them, you'll have two dogs and your wife won't want to leave them
behind.
It's
not happening. No. Thanks, Kate.
They'll live in my basement.
You're welcome.
There you go. That's Kate McNamara. She covers business for us here on the home stretch.